Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Sometimes you feel as if you have slipped through the cracks and landed in an alternate place, maybe because of an illness, a South Dakota blizzard, a job loss, a pandemic. Catherine May has not only studied these in-between spaces, she has lived them, and now her new book is called Wintering: The Power of Rest and Retreat in Difficult Times. In the book, she explores solitude and sickness, cold water swimming, and the warmth of the human story, and she joins us now. Catherine May, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So this book feels, as soon as it came across my desk, it was just the book of the moment, like the book we all needed during the pandemic. But of course, you didn't write it during a pandemic. So tell me a little bit about how this book came to be, and then the timing that it's released here in America, at least.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think it's been the same here. After a year of what feels like a year already of lockdown and great fear and stress, the book feels incredibly relevant in ways that I never intended it to be. But I started writing the book really after I felt like I recognized this pattern across the course of my life, whereby every few years I would drop out somehow. You know, it wasn't always about the same thing. I've experienced periods of physical illness, poor mental health, bereavement, job loss, all of those different things that happen. And I just came to recognize that they took me into a common place that I would describe as wintering. And I wanted to be able to write a book that said to people, this is normal. This is a normal part of the human experience. It's not pleasant. We shouldn't be drawing any false positives about it or saying, hey, it's fine. You just tough it out. And it certainly isn't a book that's about 10 easy steps to make it go faster. But it's about saying that actually there is value in these times. They are the points of transformation in our life. And that actually, if we can learn to pay attention to them, we can learn a great deal about all of the rest of our existence, too.
Yeah. Tell me about the title, Wintering. What does that word mean to you?
Well, I'm a winter lover, so I suppose I'd always wanted to write about the glories of winter. But I think that the way that the natural world endures winter can show us a great deal about how to endure our kind of personal metaphorical winters. So I wanted to look at the way the animal world endures, you know, very cold seasons, looking at hibernation, looking at the changes that animals make to survive. I wanted to look at plants and particularly trees and the way that once they've dropped all of their leaves, they're actually doing their most important work of the year. And the insect world too, I spent some time looking at bees and learning from an expert beekeeper about how bees survive the winter. And all of those natural processes offer us huge insights into how we can start to endure that too.
One of the stories I found so compelling was when you need to take your son out of his schooling and give him a space. And you say, you know, he didn't need something, he needed you to cause a riot, I think is the word that you use. Like, it couldn't just be, oh, honey, this is hard. I'm here for you. It had to be something big. And with the disruption in education that we've seen this year, I think a lot of families and parents are experiencing this huge disconnect with education. If they hadn't already experienced that, they're having it now. Tell me a little bit about that experience with your son and watching him find out once again, you know, become himself again.
Yeah. So, I mean, my son was very happy in school for a while, but then over the course of a few months became intensely unhappy. And it was, you know, people talk about school refusal as if that's a kind of gentle process where your child says, oh, no, thank you, mother, not today. This was violent and angry. He was grieving all the time about this awful thing that he thought I was making him do. And do you know what? I didn't want to hear that. You know, I was busy. I had stuff on. I did not want to take him out of school. But I realized that I needed to radically learn to listen to him if I wasn't going to repeat the terrible things that we've done to children in the past, where we've said that their concerns don't matter. And then we listen to people speak as adults and we really hear how often children's suffering endures well into adulthood if it's not listened to. So I took the radical decision to take him out of school. And we didn't have a plan. You know, it happened very spontaneously, actually, because the school were making quite menacing noises to us, you know, that they'd have to report us to the authorities if he kept not attending and all this kind of thing. And I was like, that's fine, don't worry, we'll take him out altogether. And then between us, we had to work it out. And it wasn't easy, but we went through a kind of grieving process together, a process of letting go of what we expected normal life to be and learning how to exist in that space together, to, you know, make ourselves feel better sometimes, but also to dig into what that experience was. And it wasn't until after I'd taken him out of school that I realised that he was being very badly bullied, but he didn't have the language to explain that to me. He couldn't conceptualise it. And we had to really work together to work out how he went forward. But he came into himself so quickly once he was out of that toxic environment. It was amazing to see.
Yeah. That notion of releasing or letting go our expectations of what we thought life would be, what we thought our role would be in it. I mean, people are seeing that play out all across the world. Here in South Dakota, you know, we have a lot of choices with what we can do. We have very few restrictions during the pandemic that are mandated. And you really hear that with people looking around at choices their neighbors are making and feeling this huge dissonance right now.
I think that's so hard.
Yeah. How do you cushion that blow in some ways through your experiences over the years of just facing that expectation and laying down that bed of straw that you talk about to sort of, you know, you're going to be on the ground soon. I'd like to land on something soft.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the first thing I'd say is acknowledging that you're on the ground. You know, I think that we find that very hard to do, to actually know that we're suffering rather than to keep trying to delay it or to pretend it's not happening or to numb ourselves against it. You know, like I read an article today about how problem drinking has increased massively during the time of the pandemic. But also, you know, on a perhaps less dangerous level, we are watching hours and hours of TV. We're spending hours and hours flicking between apps on our phone. You know, we're doing all of these things to try and avoid feeling our winter. And I actually think that a short amount of time spent paying attention to our feelings, understanding the exact quality of them at any given time, can really help us to find the next step and to help to move through it and to begin to learn that, you know, we are not in control of this situation. And that's not just the pandemic. We're not in control of any of this. Like, we can respond in the moment. We can do the best we can. We can make the best preparations we can, but we also have to let go of the idea that we rule this world, because we really, really don't. And that sounds like a painful process, but once you truly absorb that and truly absorb your lack of control and your humility in the face of these bigger forces, life becomes slightly easier and your job becomes about dealing with your process of change and managing that rather than trying to exercise control over the outside world.
You mentioned before and throughout the book are woven in stories of, you know, being in water or being outside or taking a journey to the Northern Lights or holding a little dormouse in your hand as it hibernates. Talk about why you think that the natural world is such an important part of human wintering.
Well, I think that until, I mean, say 150 years ago or so, before the Industrial Revolution, we would have had to winter as well. Like, we don't have to anymore because we have really brilliant technologies that stop us from having to worry about winter. I know that's really relevant for you guys more than it is for me. Like, I live in a very temperate part of the UK.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have fantastic double glazing, central heating, light bulbs. And it's very hard for us to imagine a time when we might have had to have faced getting cut off in the winter, that we might have had to have dealt with, you know, total darkness at night. that we might have had to have coped with feeling cold. And it's hard to imagine wanting to go back to that. But actually, I would argue that our bodies evolved to live in that way rather than in this way. And many of the ways that we suffer through winter now are probably caused by the fact that we're not used to coming into full contact with it. So I think we need to learn to get a bit cold again, to go outside in the winter, to experience darkness, you know, to turn the lights off at night and to go to sleep instead of keeping ourselves awake all night and wondering why we can't sleep when we want to. And I mean, I don't mean being incredibly rugged or suffering or giving ourselves chilblains. But I do mean getting back into some natural rhythms, which I have found incredibly comforting to reacquaint myself. I'm not sure my body ever knew them, but to reacquaint myself with on an evolutionary scale, maybe.
I know thinking, reading your words about sleep has changed the way I think of my nights when I wake up at 3 a.m. Yeah. as instead of something to fight against, just a very human thing, that there was a time that you just have the watch then. And that's kind of a normal thing to embrace. It takes a lot of the anxiety out of a sleepless night.
Absolutely, yeah. So I've learned to get up. I mean, it's really interesting, isn't it? That 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, it's really common to wake up. And we're so used to getting cross with ourselves about it. Like, we've broken sleep. Sleep is not correct. Actually, for most of human history, we would have woken up at that time and been awake for about 2 hours. And what's more, we'd have really enjoyed that time. And I've returned to it, and it's lovely to hear that you have, because I met a doctor recently at a reading. And she started advising her patients to read the book, has had some real success with her long-term insomniacs who previously were taking medication and who now are just accepting that they wake up in the night and learning to love it like I do.
Yeah. Tell me about emerging, because one of the, you know, I think risks or challenges that we'll face next is our impatience to go back to some kind of collective life, whatever, if that's from bereavement or from divorce or a job loss or the pandemic itself. But there is a way to do that thoughtfully as well, to sort of bring those gifts along. What can you tell us about emerging from a period of wintering?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really important to take those times slowly, to acknowledge that there's actually a transition happening rather than a cut-off date. You know, there will be a time when this is all gone. And I think that a lot of us are going to struggle the most at that time. I think the people who've sailed through up to now, probably, you know, many people are going to find it very hard at that point to get back into a sense of normality. I mean, I did over the summer, so we had a more formal lockdown than you've had, where we were definitely not allowed to do all sorts of things. And one of the things I wasn't allowed to do was swim in the sea, which is the thing that I find the most comforting. And I missed it and hankered after it. And then when the restrictions were lifted, I found myself not swimming because I couldn't adapt back again. Like my brain had learned a new rule, and it struggled to unlearn it, that I was allowed to do it again. And it's really important that we take things slowly and know that we are not creatures that can U-turn very fast. I mean, do you think maybe your election is really informative about this, that a lot of people thought that all the tension would be over at this point? But of course it's not. We're in a massive transition period and there's still loads of stuff to be worked out. You know, there's still loads of disagreements within families and things like that that are going to take a long time to solve. And we've had the same thing with our Brexit debate.
Yeah. Indeed. Well, it is a book of the moment very much, but it's also a book for a lifetime. And it's called Wintering, The Power of Rest and Retreat in Difficult Times. My guest has been the author, Catherine May. What a delight to meet you. Thank you so much, Catherine.
Thank you so much.